Blog Talk Radio.
And getting to the heart of the matter of the seven high commandments is sharing with other blessed souls like yourselves, all endowed with a divine image, known as the Tzelem Elokim, a type of information that you normally are not able to get. And today we have to continue with our third installment of getting to the heart of the matter, with a direct, up close and frank interview with human rights activist Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock. And we want to start off with a brief teaching, blessed souls, taken from Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Formation, an early Kabbalistic work from around 2,000 plus years ago, that the end is wedged in the beginning, and should come no surprise to you that the beginning is wedged in its end. And today, Rabbi Goldstock will discuss how heart-to-heart is not just relevant, the concept of heart-to-heart, lev-to-lev, is not just relevant to Jewish people, but equally relevant for distinguished children of the children of Noah. So please tune in today as Rabbi Goldstock will talk more about the implications setting up a new, shiny, bright center of hope in Israel, you know, Israel, the place that's called the land of milk and honey, flowing and growing with meditations about the Creator, the Most High, blessed be He, Ein Sof, Baruch Hu, and preparing the world for universal redemption. So first let's bring in our co-host today, Rabbi Goldstock. Rabbi Goldstock, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Reb Don Zusha Goodman, Tzadik, Chassid, Gaon, Chaver Tov. I just wanted to mention that I didn't hear the whole introduction. Something happened and I got sort of disconnected. But I just wanted to mention that this is the today is the yahrzeit of Rabbi Dov Ber of Lubavitch. He was arrested by on the trumped up charges, threatened by the imperial authority of the Tsar, and subsequently was exonerated of all of the charges and released. And it's released. Anyhow, the point
yesterday
is
was yours. Today's the day of redemption.
The redemption, right. And right. So it's a Yom Tov sort of a celebration, and we'll be making Fabringans later today, and we'll discuss what those are later. But this happened in 1826, and the tie-in to that is very interesting because as far as I can see, the entire purpose of our existence from the beginning, which is wedged, or the ending, which is wedged in the beginning, is wedged in the end, there, it's the same, is that the whole purpose was that we would eventually and all ultimately wind up in Yerushalayim. Now, as we know, and as I said earlier in the earlier discussions, we spoke about the concept of children that were taken, or the people that were taken from by the Yimach Shemo, the Nazis, in World War II. The first ones to go were the children who were disabled and the adults, and those were the disabled Jews, and they were that was the worst thing to be. Well, it actually turns out to be the best thing, because they're going to be the first ones. It says that in the entire, it says that the children will be the first ones to recognize Mashiach. The children will be the ones to lead us there. And, of course, amongst all of those children are the children who are currently what we call disabled or handicapped, who will no longer have those problems. So they will be the ones for sure that it's Avade. For sure they will recognize Mashiach first. So the thing that we're working on right now is this project that, as you mentioned, in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim specifically. And the whole concept of this idea is that, first of all, parents and families have such an overwhelming set of circumstances they need to overcome in order to eventually wind up in Yerushalayim. So many of the families who have children that are born with disabilities and handicaps are avoiding going to Israel and avoiding Yerushalayim specifically because of many of the things that we have kind of learned how to accept and integrate into our lives here in New York, Paris, London. When I say here, I mean every place that's not in Jerusalem. So we want to set up a center, and it's interesting because the word center is merkaz, or you know, it's funny because in psychology, for many years in the 60s, gestalt, everybody was learning about gestalt. Well, gestalt is actually, I think, a Yiddish term, or was adapted from one group or another. Eventually, we talk about the gestalt of things all the time in Yiddish. Meaning the center, the very center, the essence of something. We as Jews are working to make a center in Yerushalayim. Now, that's kind of a redundancy, because if you stop and think about it, the exact center of everything, the heart of every matter on the planet since day one, has been Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. And that works for everybody. That's not just for the Jews. That's for everyone. And I suspect that most of all of the anger and angst and problems that we are experiencing here in the Gullus today is all out of jealousy and anger and upset and frustration that it was set up this way. And if we had just all followed it without the ego involvement, you know, the first thing I remember as a child hearing is Jews are the chosen people. Well, that became like a negative thing. You know, you kind of wanted to hide it because a lot of us didn't understand what in the world we're talking about. Chosen to be, you know, beat up and chased down the street and frustrated and so on and so on. But it turns out we were entrusted with this thing called the Torah. And we were chosen to be the people of the Torah and to follow the Torah. Now, the truth of the matter is, so was everyone else. But if you don't learn that at a very early age and you're taught something else, that something else becomes the wedge, as you put it so aptly in the beginning, that keeps us apart rather than wedging it in a way that it becomes integrative. You know, we understand that if you wedge something in over a period of time, it actually becomes part of something. But if you wedge it in and it doesn't belong, it's as if you have a growth there that needs to be removed. So the things that actually have kept us apart and the things that have actually kept us from becoming united as one, meaning everyone, the whole planet, is that people came up with other ideas. Look, there are very smart people on this planet. There have always been very smart people on this planet. And anyone can take certainly something as brilliant as the Torah and turn it into a document. They can take pieces of it. And if you look at any religion on the planet, it has little portions of the Torah, but it doesn't have the whole picture. So if I wanted to start a group and encompass my little concept, whatever my little world is, all I have to do is take one specific area of the Torah and I can make a whole religion out of it. Well, of course, because truth is truth. The problem is that when truth becomes so watered down and becomes involved with ego, it of course it's so filled with the essence of where it comes from, its source, that ultimately we become ensconced in something that is not source but is actually ego. Now, I'm not saying ego is bad because everybody needs one, because if you didn't have an ego, you wouldn't be able to get anything done. But the ego has to be understood that when you're in the room, I once heard a story, and I'm telling a little story about, you know, the Rebbe. I once said, you know, how come everybody, you know, if you notice people, when they went in to see the Rebbe, they were all so very humble, they almost looked like they were fearful or afraid. Well, somebody explained to me a very interesting thing. They said, look, if you go into a room where there's two egos, nothing's going to happen because one ego is going to negate the other one and nothing's going to go on. But if you're in there for a serious moment, a moment in time, which sometimes could have been a half hour, 45 minutes, or it could have been, you know, a minute or just seconds, if you are completely bittle, humble to the other ego, you will learn an amazing amount of information about yourself, and you will see the revelation of the essence of life flowing into your body from the other ego in the room, which was the Rebbe. So when I used to go in, and when anybody went in before the Rebbe, they always made sure that you didn't have to work at it too hard, but you would come in and see, to the Rebbe, before the Rebbe, you understood that the only ego in the room is going to be the Rebbe's. And the Rebbe knew the real from the fakes, and believe me, he loved everybody. It wasn't a matter of just because he knew that, you know, I wasn't 100%, you know, what I presented myself to be before the Rebbe. I still was trying to understand and put my personal ego, the part of myself that deals with the world, I put that aside and was allowed the Rebbe to enter me and for me to become like as much of a klita sponge as I possibly could. So. I'll get it in a minute. I'm doing it. Just a second. I have somebody here who wants to say hi. Quick, come here.
Okay.
I have somebody here. This is Menachem Mendel Goldstock. He happens to be home from school today. He doesn't feel well, and he just popped in, so I'm just going to say, this is Don, Reb Don. You want to say hi?
Yeah. Hi, Don.
Hi, Menachem Mendel. How are you feeling? I hear you feel a little under the weather. I hope you feel better. What's that?
Hashem.
Baruch Hashem, he says.
let me ask Menachem Mendel, have you been to Israel yet?
Have you been to Israel?
Yeah.
Yeah? You like it? Do you like Israel?
Yeah.
You going back?
Yeah.
Who's in Israel right now?
Suri.
And who else?
Mommy.
Devori.
Adam. Avi.
Avi. Okay.
And Suri. Avi.
And
Zalman.
Zalman. Uh-huh.
Asura.
And Shira. Right. Okay. Go back and watch.
Thank you, Menachem Mendel.
I'll take care of you as soon as I finish, okay? All right, thank you. Okay, so I just popped in, so I wanted to be sure.
Hey, he can pop in any time he wants.
Absolutely. When I'm finished, I'll do it. Okay? Thanks. I appreciate it. Just leave it there. Yeah. He wants another sandwich. Okay. And that was with the sign up. Don't come in here, you know? By the way, walk, talk, and eat, he does. Reading, we haven't gotten him up to yet, so okay. Okay, so where was I? I was talking about the essence of receiving, the concept of being.
Yes.
So there's always a hashpa, there's always a mashpia, there's somebody who gives, and there's a receiver, makabel. Mm-hmm. So we are the makabel. That's where the source of the word Kabbalah comes from. So we were able to make ourselves the receivers of the Torah, and the Eibishter was the giver. But when you come in before the Rebbe, when you came in for a yechidus of any kind, what do you call it? Yechidus? It's like a private audience with the Rebbe. He would be the only ego in the room. And if it wasn't that way, there were a lot of people who came in before the Rebbe who were so impressed with themselves, and they would come before the Rebbe. And if you look at any of the videotapes, it's really quite amusing to watch the dynamic between the Rebbe and somebody who felt his importance but really wasn't anywhere near the level of the Rebbe. That it's really quite an interesting dynamic, but we're not here to discuss that now. Okay, now, in order to overcome all of the difficulties that a family needs to overcome when they make Aliyah, there needs to be some center, some form of a gestalt that they're able to grab onto. Because, first of all, the Medina, the state of Israel, which is not a Torah state, and we want it to be, but in the meantime, since it is not a Jewish state, at least it is a state of Jews. We want to participate and support that, not because we agree with the concept of the state as it is, but because we don't want, God forbid, anything to happen to the Jews that are there, A, and B, eventually Mashiach will come and it'll all be straightened out anyhow. But rather than than make all of the Jews of the world find themselves vulnerable to all of the wolves, so to speak, we have chosen to support and participate as much as humanly possible in the development of the land of Israel. So I always talk about Eretz Yisrael. I don't talk about
Medinat Israel,
the state of Israel. I talk about Eretz Yisrael. So when somebody says, "Where are you going?" I say Eretz Yisrael. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but I'm saying that only because I want you to understand in the context in which we're putting together this center. Our center will provide a lot of counseling for the families, as well as, for example, respite for the families. In other words, the family comes on vacation, whether it's just a simple vacation or a pilot trip, for example. They want to explore the possibilities of living in Israel.
Right.
This is going to be a place where the families will be able to come and get all of the answers that they need while their special needs child is going to be cared for. And they will be given the opportunity to tour the country, for example. We'll provide, if they want to take the child, we'll provide, Emirat Hashem, a van with all of the handicap accessibility devices necessary to provide that. And we will and we'll take the parents, if they want to allow the child to remain behind and socialize with other children, which is, as we said in the last discussion, is one of the things that's lacking for special needs children. So if a child wants to stay and socialize with the group or follow them around on their daily routine, perfectly willing. It's going to be flexible enough to do all of that. Now, in order to provide that kind of flexibility, you need to provide something that is so highly organized that the flexibility can function within that, and nobody is going to be confused or disturbed by the fact that there's a new face here or that somebody is going to be taken out to participate. Perhaps they want to take a child with them, another child, but they want the child to see their son or daughter to see the country and to see what's available. Okay. Now, the ultimate goal, again, is to accommodate all of these people, adults, primarily adults. I mean, we're working on adults. That's our goal. And our constituency will be the nations of the world, the English-speaking nations of the world. Now, here's the problem. You have families who have children that were born with a disability, and their goal may have been at one time to live in Israel, which is many people's goal and objective, because, let's face it, it happens to be the ultimate location on the planet if you want to really be a participating Jew without the distractions. I remember living in Israel at this time of the year, and I was driving up Derek Chevron once. We were heading out to I was going to Gilo from I don't remember Talpiot or someplace, and all of a sudden I looked up and it was like the 26th or 27th of December, and there was one of these Merry Christmas signs going across the road with all the decorations and everything on it, and I said, "Wow, when is that?" You know, I had no clue. Hanukkah had ended a week before or a couple days before that, and as I was traveling, I realized that where I am being inundated and bombarded with all of the holiday festivities, which, you know, granted, I mean, I'm happy that everybody is able to celebrate and be with their families, but it has nothing to do with, the Jewish experience or the Torah. Now, especially if you're a Jew. Now, and I don't want to get into that either because that's not what our discussion is about. However, it is important to note that that does become quite a distraction. When you're living in Israel, you don't even feel it. In fact, you don't even feel it so much so that when you see the children running around on Purim with masks and with their costumes on and exchanging mishalach manos and giving gifts to the poor and participating in eating a big suda and the parents have an opportunity to drink and to drink until ad lo yada, you see that this is not only the time of the year and not only the season, but we're completely saturated with the whole idea of Purim. And of course, when Pesach comes, there isn't. We look at the whole country of Israel, the whole Eretz Yisrael, as without chametz. To see, I remember my father, Olive Shalom, and I walking. We were up on the side of a mountain in Gilo on Yom Kippur after we finished Kol Nidre. And he and I were walking home, and he looked out over the whole city of Yerushalayim, and all you could see there was just sparkling lights. There wasn't a car on the road. It was quiet. It was beautiful, clear sky. And my father looked at me, and he said, "Now I understand." And that was a really prophetic moment for me, because I realized that with all of the discussions and all of the interaction and dynamic that we have over and discussions and philosophies, that it's very difficult for us to really grasp the magnitude of this without seeing it firsthand as we did. Now, in order to live and learn in a hands-on experience, in a safe and secure environment, we need to make the center. Why? I'll tell you why. We have a young man who this happened in our family. My cousin came to visit a boy that was entrusted, who had a trust fund set up in his name by his mother, who had worked her entire life. She was a doctor. Worked her entire life, and she set aside this money for him because he was unable to care for himself, and gave it over to an attorney, a young man whom she knew after he had finished school, and he went through law school and whatever, and he became an attorney, and he took over this trust fund, and he made sure that this young boy was able to to be provided for, and she also made sure that there was going to be enough money for him, you know, for until his reunification with
Brooklyn.
Now, the thing is like this: he did this in such a way. I mean, she did this in such a way that the money should have lasted, you know, Lossie Lava to the end of time. But what happened was, unknown to my cousins and the people who were kind of monitoring all this, the lawyer had passed away.
Uh-huh.
And the attorney that took over for him, a lady who I'm sure was well-intentioned, didn't care, that there was funds, there was enough funding in there. You know, she saw that it had lasted all this time. So she started taking a salary for caring for the trust fund. And what ultimately happened was that, of course, the money ran out. And when my cousin went to visit, she saw all these notices, you know, the evictions and, you know, last call and blah, blah, blah. And on it went. And she said, what the heck? And she called the law firm and found out the lawyer had passed away and the money was gone and that this lady had been taking bigger and bigger chunks of the trust fund as time went on. Now, even though the trust fund was set up specifically for this young man, what the lawyer did was perfectly legal because there was no specification in there that whoever administers this trust fund is not entitled to anything. And you do something like that, no one's going to monitor it. But if they leave it blank, they were trusting in the goodness and kindness of the people who would ultimately be caring for, which at that time was a young man, a lawyer who obviously passed away long before his time. Now, I say that story only because I want you to understand that when a person does everything they can to ensure the fact that an adult child is going to be cared for until, you know, their final days, and that they will have everything pretty much cared for, so all they need do is pretty much take care of themselves and develop their social life, it can't be accomplished with certainty that it will happen that way.
Right.
Now, if we develop this in Eretz Yisrael, this project, there is no way that the money and the funding for a specific child or a group of children or for the center itself would be under any danger of being eliminated, because the funding will be monitored by the banking system and by the Minister of Health, has already, as I said earlier, has already mentioned that the Ministry of Health and so forth and so on. All of these people, who, by the way, all happen to be religious Jews, have volunteered to ensure the fact that the funding will always be there no matter who is staffing, and that they would ensure the fact that there will always be Torah Jews that will be staffing, monitoring, and supervising everything that goes on. Now, this unique staff that I'm talking about will be personnel such as social workers who will be trained in Israel, will have a training outside of Israel, hopefully in order to gain some of the access and knowledge to research that is, you know, current research, psychologists, teachers, and people who have spent time working with a special needs adult population from all over the world. We'll have seminars for parents, we'll have seminars for the staff, and we'll have seminars for the residents in order to teach them what is available to them and how they can access all of the services to the best of their ability. As I mentioned, our constituency spans the entire globe. So we have Australia, South Africa, England, Canada, the United States. We have a few English-speaking, New Zealand, et cetera, et cetera. And all of these locations are providing, they have approached us and said that, you know, please help us. We need to make this this a very serious effort to make this to overcome the serious failure that has somehow occurred with the development of people actually keeping their children.
Have a caller. Would you be interested in taking a phone call?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Caller, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Blog Talk Radio, SoCalls number 111, getting to the heart of the matter. Could you please identify your first name and if you have a question for Rabbi Goldstock?
My name is Julia. I'm from Texas. Actually, not really, but, I have a handicapped half-sister, and so I know that she's an adult, but I've noticed, there has always been problems like that, not with, just the Jewish, but any of the handicapped children, be they children at the time or, grown adults later on and have no one to help care for them. I think that is, they have the safeguarding of the children is very, very important. And a lot of times we as parents don't don't think of all the different problems that could arise, like you said the earlier, the death in the first lawyer who was handling the trust fund and stuff. I think that is very, very important, and it's a wonderful thing that you are making this happen.
Eliezer, would you like to respond?
Well, yeah. First of all, I didn't catch your name. I'm sorry.
Julia? Oh, my name, Julia. J-U-L-I-A. Julia. Yes,
Julia.
Sir.
Okay. Thank you very much for making that point. I worked with, and where is your sister, by the way?
My sister is with my mother in Paducah, Kentucky.
Oh, okay. Believe it or not, I know where that is. Okay. One of the things that that the Lubavitcher Rebbe pointed out in a letter that he once wrote to Dr. Wilkes, who was working here in Coney Island Hospital, was that children, when they become adults, should be allowed or encouraged to leave home just like every other child in the family was when they became an adult. When you became 18 or 19, whatever it was, and you were going to college, you went away to college or you went away to school or you went out and started working in the world. There is no place like that for children who have disabilities, especially those who are mentally retarded or have functional disabilities like PDD, developmental disorders. I worked with Cardinal O'Connor here in New York, helping the Catholic Archdiocese to develop a project that through their special needs format, that ultimately was to be used as a continuation or continuum of services that would provide exactly this type of thing in the adult community, with the Catholic community. He unfortunately he passed away. He had some serious problems that I didn't even know about at the time when I was dealing with him. But he was a very, very cordial and a remarkable person when it came to dealing with the special needs of his community. And the fact that he had called on me to come in there, showed that he really didn't care where. He wasn't that chauvinistic that it mattered to him. As far as you're concerned, is your mother planning to allow your sister to move on, to go somewhere, or is she just... go ahead.
Well, my sister is Down syndrome, and she, at one time, she's 40, let's see, she's 49 right now. At one time, when she was younger, and I think in her 25, when she finally finished school, at that time she lived in Michigan, and she lived at a halfway house. And she did really well, and they had some place where she, in the community, that she could work. She worked in a little cafeteria. And doing dishes and making salads and stuff like that. But as far, she could never grasp, she didn't have the mentality to grasp the money exchange system, and thus my mother was told that she could never truly quite live on her own. Mom had her apartment right next to, in the house next to where my mom lived at another time, and so she had her own little apartment. But now since mom moved to Kentucky, we haven't talked as much as we used to in the past, and I'm not sure what mom has got planned for Tracy at this moment. I know she health-wise, she's been having, you know, she had some passing out problems, and I'm not sure, you know, what all her health problems are at this stage of the game.
So this is the classic example of what we're talking about, where had Tracy been given the opportunity at the age of 25 to move into an assisted living apartment with other friends,
mm-hmm.
given a job where she was trained to do the job properly and didn't have to deal with money, but only had to learn how to use, for example, a transportation card or an ID card in order to access various things. And she could go to and from independently or with a group or with a guide to and from work, come home and participate in an assisted living, and she would have a full array of social life and social activities with others who have Down syndrome as well. Tracy sounds to me like she would have benefited immensely over the course of the last 25 years or 24 years of her life at this point, especially from the time that she was that she started working at the age of 25. Living at home is always nice, and I think we would all like to stay at home and live for mom with mom's cooking. But ultimately we have to go out and make our own way. And people who have Down syndrome, I have a daughter who's 21, and as you heard, Mendy earlier came in. Mendy is we spoke about him earlier.
Uh-huh.
Previous program. What we are involved in is trying to totally integrate a human being into the human experience to their fullest potential, and making it an experience that that it fulfills their needs and fulfills them as human beings, both spiritually,
mm-hmm.
emotionally, physically, intellectually, etc.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I know when I spent quite a bit of time with Tracy, there were a lot of things that she would see my life and how I was living, and she would want to duplicate it for herself,
right.
or to a certain point. Okay. You know, and she wanted to get married, and she wanted to have children. She wanted to have a home where she could cook, and, you know, and I let her, you know, watch my son when he was little, and it gave her a sense of being, of
participating. Yeah, sure.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes,
and,
definitely.
And that's one of the things that that I found. I've been working in this field for as long as she's been alive, and so you guys are actually a step ahead of me. I mean, I was working in the field. I didn't actually have anyone in my family that that had Downs. But one of the things that we want to do is we want to provide a preparation for young people with Downs to enter the working field and to train them properly so that they don't just enter even a class about what they're going to be doing without understanding what is expected of them in the class. In other words, total preparation is the secret here. It may take them 6 weeks to get ready to do something that may only take you, 20 minutes to prepare for. But if they would learn how to do, we want to teach classes on health, for example, health and hygiene. Mm-hmm. Health and hygiene are two categories that are often overlooked and avoided when you're beginning to deal with adults, because there are a lot of very uncomfortable things that people find difficult to convey properly.
True.
We want to develop cooking classes and focus on nutrition and healthy eating. I noticed that one of the things that that came about with my daughter, Suri, for example, is when we started talking about, she started putting on a little bit of extra weight, which she's starting to get rid of, because we started talking about eating healthy and doing healthy things and, you know, participating in nutritionally sound eating activities. And it made an impact. We want to work on self-esteem. For example, creating...
Eliezer, can I interject for a second?
Yes.
Because I'm really enjoying this conversation, but I just want to add a point that I think, too, that, you know, Julie, you mentioned that your sister was assessed about her money handling abilities. And I think what gets thrown by the wayside with a lot of people, and especially distinguished individuals like your sister, is that there is a concept, maybe Eliezer can elaborate on this, this idea of multiple levels of intelligence. You know, there used to be, mm-hmm. when I was growing up, we would take an SAT test to mm-hmm. get into college, and we would take an IQ
Howard
test.
Gardner.
But now, yeah.
Howard
so
Gardner.
Now there's many ways of accessing, you know, where is a person's intelligence lying? It could be a person could be musically oriented. They can learn to count through music, or through watching a video game. I have a 7-year-old niece who was given an iPad, and she is, she is learning how to read and write and mm-hmm. speak spontaneously, not just parrot as many autistic children will, what they hear,
oh, yeah.
but she's speaking spontaneously, and she's learning to speak in proper syntax. So perhaps
wow.
when your sister was assessed, they gave her just a straight, you know, well, they put a dollar and a $5 bill and a quarter and a nickel. So, oh, well, you know, how much is this and this? And there might have been, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there, and I don't want to overly
right.
be critical. But Liz, maybe you'd like to talk about that, how there can be.
You know, it's funny that you bring that, Don, it's funny that you bring that up, because I mentioned Howard Gardner. He came up
right.
with many levels of, it's called the theory of multiple intelligence. That's what it was.
Uh-huh.
He was a Harvard researcher. And he just determined that people have a variety of different intelligences. For example, I'll try to remember them all. Linguistic intelligence, which is the ability to understand multiple and manipulate language. Logical and mathematical intelligence, you know, to order and assess and measure numbers. And by the way, these are the basic core ones. Visual and spatial intelligence, which is primarily what artists and so forth are involved with. And then we get into musical intelligence, which is something we don't really test anywhere, but it's, you know, the ability to understand people like Mozart and Avram Fried and so forth. And then pitch and rhythm and tone. That's, you know, is sometimes people can't sing on pitch and they can't keep the rhythm, but they love music. And I'm going to guarantee you that Julia is going to tell me that her sister Tracy loves music, and that that's one of the things that she likes to listen to or likes to use a lot of her time with. Then the next category would be something like bodily kinesthetic intelligence, which is movement, any kind of movement, dance, sport, whatever. And then interpersonal intelligence, which is dealing one person with another. For example, Ronald Reagan was an excellent example of that. He recognized the other motivations and intentions of other people. And then we have intrapersonal, which is the ability for self examination, psychiatrists and so forth. And then you have natural intelligence. Remember this guy Steve Irwin? You ever hear of this guy? He was like amazing. He had a certain naturalistic ability. And then the people who can recognize and identify flora and fauna, foraging. And the last category, which we added an intelligence called spiritualists. or spiritual intelligence, which is the what I call the Baal Shem Tov, or Arizal, you know, the ability to see and reveal the spiritual essence of life. And that's those are the understanding the deeper meanings of life. And those are categories of intelligence that are never looked at, never tested, never even dealt with. However, it is these are the categories in which we want to specifically plug our children, adult children, into to discover what it is that they can do with their lives that they will truly enjoy, find fulfilling, and ultimately achieve their complete fulfillment.
Oh, I agree. Yes. I noticed when Tracy, my mom and all my family pretty much are either Christian or secular, for the most part.
It happens.
But, yeah, it happens. I know with Tracy, in what she was raised, she has the ability to her memory is awesome. She
Uncanny.
Could tell you who played what in what soap opera, what movie, and the time and what they're doing now, you know, as the actors and actresses. And she loved to dance, and she loved the music. And she could read simple, I say, first grade, second grade. She could read the magazines. She could pick out words and get the gist of the story and understand it. So, yeah, I think if she had been at the time frame, if she had the opportunity, she could have done so much more than what she has done.
Thank you very much for making that point, because it's something that you and I know, something that many parents who are at this crossroads often find very challenging, because, you know, let's face it, they've been protecting this little neshama, this little soul, since birth, and then all of a sudden, at the age of 18, 20, 25, they're being asked to and challenged to allow that soul, that little neshama, to now go and grow to reach its full potential. The fact that we have, for example, we want to offer classes in making a home, making a proper Jewish home, especially for the Jew. The reason that we are concentrating on the Jewish, the need for the Jewish home or center, is because many places around the world, I've found that there are little villages and little places that small little enclaves of non-Jewish or secular locations that have been provided for, specifically Down syndrome, which is my area of, if you want to call it expertise, I don't call it expertise, I call it my area of interest in learning, but it's a category that I find is missing in the whole world. And the reason we chose Jerusalem to do it is because it's the one place that nobody really can say that it's a better location than Los Angeles or a better location than Sydney. I have provided also, we want to develop, of course, swimming and exercises and so forth and so on. But people who have Down syndrome are known for their creativity. They all have some form of either art, design, or sewing, or knitting. They eventually can develop this because they have a certain patience. Once you get them to sit down and start doing it, and they love the area of drama and music, as you mentioned, Tracy.
Yes.
What?
Oh, I was just saying yes. I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah, Tracy, I guarantee you would be an excellent actress. Even if it was on the stage as in an amateur production, she would be, probably feel fulfilled, and everybody who watched her would understand and appreciate what the energy that goes into creating a dramatic moment or a musical number or a dance piece. I know my daughter loves to dance, and she's danced in groups, and she goes to she's gone to ballet classes, and they actually enjoy having her because she's tenacious. She wants to finish what she started. And one of the things I found, especially in adults, anyone with Down syndrome, is that instead of us focusing, when a child is born, we always make it a point to say, "Oh, look at this child! This is going to be my genius. This kid's going to have more talent than God ever intended for one child. And I'm going to see to it that they get the best education money can buy: Harvard, Yale, Princeton. Well, I guess I should throw in UCLA too. Huh? So the point is that
he happened to go there.
So the thing is that that all of that having been said, it's those categories are limited only to those who really have the talent, really have the intelligence, the genius, or have the ability to get into one of those schools. But if we would look at every single child, and say, "I want my child to have a nice personality, a pleasant personality. Mm-hmm. I want my child to have a good character. Mm-hmm. Be an honest and a straightforward person, and that my child will have the tenacity to complete any task that they begin." I have now created a person that doesn't matter what their intelligence is. The only thing that matters is they're pleasant to be around, so everyone likes to be there with them. They have good character, so they know that they're trustworthy and they're honest, and you can trust them with pretty much anything. And they have the tenacity to complete what they began, which means you put them in front of something, they're going to stay there until they complete the task. And those are the categories that we should be more interested in than the genius and talent. And the children, the adults who have, and people who have Down syndrome, are renowned for their chesed, their kindness, their warmth, and their love of every person. And so we want to continue to, we would like to, in our center, we'd like to offer volunteer work with others, where they would go out and work in other organs. In other words, they've been I call it the victims of kindness, Everyone wants to be a do-gooder when it comes to a person with Down syndrome. No one wants to be their lifetime friend. But when they have and are working with other people who are their lifetime friends that they just met as adults, that they want to go out and give back because they've always been the recipient. So now they've been the makabel. They've been the one who receives. Now they want to be the mashpia. They want to give back. They want to go and help. I noticed that when my daughter goes to a senior centers and, where seniors are living, she goes over and talks to people. They don't have any problem dealing with somebody in a wheelchair because they don't see the wheelchair. They see the person.
Eliza, can I interject? I think it's a very poignant story about how the receivers become the givers. You told me last week after we did our second installment of Getting to the Heart of the Matter, the story in Texas, how there were two young men with Down syndrome who were actually well-versed in the martial arts and they were picked on, and how they taught those who were picking on them a lesson that they'll probably never forget. And hopefully we'll all learn a lesson from this story you'll share with us right now.
There was a group of boys in a playground playing a game of football, or they were practicing football. I guess it was a team sport. And a couple of them decided that they were on the sideline, saw these two boys walking past the playground who had obviously had Down syndrome, and they were talking, minding their own business, and all of a sudden, somebody yelled out retard or spaz or, whatever derogatory term that they wanted to use. So the two boys with Downs turned to the fellows in the playground and stepped inside the actual playground area, in the field area through the fence. And the boys were taunting them, came over to them and started giving it to them. And it turns out that these two boys, since they were 5 or 6 years old, had been studying boxing and karate and were absolutely at the top end of their group. And I don't know what degree belt they had, but they obviously could handle themselves. and they proceeded to teach a lesson to these football players, at which point they turned around and walked away. Now, the way Don was saying was, wow, I bet they never, you know, I don't know what they ever did before that or after that, but I do know that the two boys who had Down syndrome certainly felt a lot better at the afterward. And it kind of points out that, look, if you are tenacious enough and you put your time and energy into any activity, you will come away a success, and you will feel good about yourself, and you'll have all of the skills and talents and that you need to, you know, fulfill your potential. And as volunteers and as givers back to the community, both positive and more positive, I would say that everyone needs time to relax, and the center that we're putting together is going to provide an opportunity for, you know, after you've gone and pummeled a few football players who have a negative approach, you'll have an opportunity to come back and rest in a rec center where you can complete your day with working on computers, games, a theater, with a library, and other games. We also want to develop an animal husbandry project where I found that children and adults who have Down syndrome do very well with animals, dogs and farm animals. So we were thinking that we would develop an area where we'd have gardens, and we would have a little barn with a few barnyard animals, chickens and goats and so forth. Where they could not only take care for the animals, but learn as much as they could about them, and hopefully allow other people to come through, family members, etc., to see the successes that they're having at working with these categories. We also want to provide counseling for the families themselves. I mean, I'm sure that Julia and her mother probably could have used someone to come in on a regular basis and sit down and explain all of the details and all of the problems that they're encountering and how to deal with them, and help them anticipate better what they were about to encounter. Because I'm sure there was a lot of times when you and your mom felt like you were flying blind. And even today, I'm sure that there are things that are cropping up. We want to benefit from your experience. We want you to be able to tell us what we're anticipating so that we can now provide the information to all of those families who have not yet arrived at that point, and help them properly to prepare for it.
I know in the time frame that from my mother and listening with my mom and knowing things that have happened when she, you know, raised Tracy and all, there's a lot of negativity, a lot of, what's the word I want to use, where they would...
negativity works pretty good.
Negativity.
Yeah.
Okay. Where, you know, she was hindered. She would come up against obstacles, and people would say, put her in a home. She needs to be, you know, in a state-run institution, or she's never going to do this, and she's never going to do that. And I know my mom was very tenacious in saying she's going to.
Well, you know what, your mom did.
You know what I'm saying.
Julia,
what blessings for your mother, Julia.
I just want to say your mom did a brilliant job of raising two daughters that I know of, Julia and Tracy. And I'm just going to kind of tie this up. And you know what? I'm going to get back to this very point as we open up the next program, part four. But
yes.
I just want to say that our ultimate dream is to have a center that's going to be big enough to accommodate several assisted living apartments where our Down syndrome population of adults can live and learn hands-on in a safe and secure environment, and that it will have all of the components that we mentioned and will help people like Julia and her mom and Tracy avoid all of the pitfalls that they wound up encountering along the way with the negative bias and the negative literature. You have to understand that John Langdon Down worked in an asylum in London, and all of the literature came through his. He was related by marriage. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but he was related by marriage to Charles Darwin, and all of his literature, all the literature that they wrote about the people with Down syndrome, was that they would be that these would be people who resembled orangutans. They were compared to orangutans.
Wow.
In the 1970s, the Encyclopedia Britannica had under the category monster listed mongoloid. You see that we're just now in the year 2011, 57, 72, we're just now coming around to the point where we recognize and realize that these people have not only got potential, but they have a full array of potential and talents that have not yet been tapped. If you want to get a hold of Heart to Heart, you can reach us at 718-778-0111. I'm usurping what you're about to ask me. 778-0111. And you can also reach me at rabbigoldstock@gmail.com or hearttoheartamerican.org. That's AMERICAN.org. HeartToHeartAmerican.org, and I want to thank Don Zusha Goodman and our partner for today, Julia, for participating. Yes. And God bless you and Tracy.
Amen.
And may we all soon see the ultimate revelation of the oneness of all of us in the one place that we all want to be, Yerushalayim Eretz Kodesh.
Amen. Thank you, Eliezer and Julia. I just want to mention, Julia, next week, hopefully with Most High's blessing, we hope to be on this time again. Maybe you want to bring on your mother. Maybe you want to bring on Tracy. We can talk to Tracy. And please share with another friend that, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to get to the heart of the matter, to connect human hearts to the work of Rabbi Goldstock and get more people involved in this ever-growing circle of human consciousness, that every person is deserving of human rights because they were blessed, as is written in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, with a divine image. So we're going to, actually we're off the air, but we're still recording. So I'll humbly invite you to come on the show next week. I mean, we still have only touched the tip of the iceberg of what Rabbi Goldstock has to talk about. And again, thank you very much for enriching the show today. So now I'm going to end the show now with a song from a beautiful friend out in England. His name is David Dome, and the name of this song is called My Way Back Home, which all of us hope to get back to the core essence, as Robert Goldstock said, the gestalt for our existence through the first center of our existence is to reconnect with our human heart, to be totally in sync with the Most High's plan with creation. Take care, everyone.